AGP is ready for us. So board members, if we could, we have a lot of
territory to cover this evening. You ready? Okay. Welcome to the March 6th meeting of the San Luis Coastal Unified School District Board of Trustees. The board did not meet in closed session. And I got a little reverb there. Do we have approval on the consensus on the order of business?
Yes,
Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Let's go forward then with the approval of the minutes. Do I hear a motion to approve the minutes of February 20th, 2007?
I'll make a motion to approve those minutes.
Okay, the motion's been made by Mr. Spatafore. Do I hear a second?
I'll second.
Mr. Peters did.
Mr. Peters seconded. Any discussion?
Is there a question?
Yes.
Number five, the week of the school administrator. Is that this week? Happy School Administrator Week, all the administrators.
Okay. And I would like to just ask for one correction. Under item number 16, reports by board members and administrators, Lau from the Teach Foundation will be talking to us about the spring award cycle. So we just, I think all of the board members were, hopefully all of the board members were at the telethon. I know I was, and I had a really good time, and Janet's giving me the sign that she's going to be talking about that, so we had a really good time there. Personally, I had a really good time. So Paula, would you like to come up and, I don't know, Janet, tell us about the Teach Telethon.
And I'm currently Vice President of the Teach Foundation. And I wanted to come before you tonight and just thank all of you for your participation in our telethon that we had this past weekend. Dr. Valentine, you were an excellent MC. Mary, once again, thank you for all your help and all the board members that came and sat on our phone panel. We really appreciate your help. We raised close to $8,000. I mean, many of the schools in our district participate. And we are going to be re-airing the telethon again on March 31st, and we will have people to take donations at that time. So tune into Channel 20 on March 31st to see the telethon re-aired. And 21. Thank you, AGP. And at this time, I'm going to turn it over to Paula, who's going to talk about our grant cycle.
Can I just interrupt for a second, Paula? And again, we would just like to recognize AGP for not only televising our board meetings, but also for televising the Teach Telethon. Thank you very much.
Well, let's spend some money. It is such a privilege to come before you with the good news of all of the fabulous Teach teachers that have written us grants and all the fabulous grants we get to award. I know our time is brief tonight, so first of all, I'm going to have the grantee teachers come up to the front, and two of our grant committee members are here tonight, Marlene Peter and Terry Main. And Janet Gould. If the you know who you are, so if you could come and just elementary first grade is getting $700 for her reader's workshop. At Morro Bay High School, again, we have Colleen Wall, who's getting $725 for the Music Lab software. Terry Block at Los Ranchos Elementary in fourth grade is getting $608 to go to the Shell Beach Tide Pools. At San Luis Obispo High School in the Ag Department, we have Jody Evans, Ornamental Horticulture. She's getting $900 to build that program. And And once again at San Luis, we have Marlene Mendez, and Marlene is getting two grant awards. One is $500 for her social dance unit, and $150 toward the sexual assault and recovery prevention training that she offers in her physical education program. At San Luis Obispo High School, Jeff Lemkules, automotive comprehensive information system, or computer, I'm sorry, I did it short here, $999. We all know that that's an award-winning program, and now those kids will be having state-of-the-art software. Some of you also might remember that we've been funding the math department at San Luis Obispo High School for several years with David Melton's grant applications. This time, we're funding Slideshow for Algebra for $907. And at Bishop Peak Elementary for the fifth grade, we're granting $500 to Grace Washer's Tech Museum of Innovation trip. At San Luis Obispo High School in the Ag Department again, we're funding $750 toward Anna Bates' Parliamentary Procedure Debate Team. Any of you are familiar with how hard she works on that program? It's incredible. And lastly, we have at Bishop's Peak Elementary, the fourth, fifth grade class, $500 for Mary Frances Williams' Technology Museum of Innovation trip as well. District.
And Paula, would you remind everybody what TEACH stands for, please?
TEACH stands for the Endowment for the Advancement of Children. And after this being our seventh telethon, I guess that makes us 6 years old, and we've had 13 grant cycles, and I was going through those today, just looking at all the things we've been able to fund, and it's very, very exciting. Please keep help funding TEACH so we can fund the teachers. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, might I have the floor for a second? I just want to thank the folks from the TEACH before you leave. On behalf of the school district, the amount of work that you put into providing enriching experiences for our kids is really something that's fantastic. I want to note also that the teachers who apply for the grants inevitably are applying in order to do something extra themselves for the students in the school district, and that their initiative in seeking these grants is something also which brings enrichment to our students. I think it is a partnership that has served us so well for 6 years and for which we are so grateful, and I thank them very much for that.
All right, let's move on to public comment, and we have a couple of people who'd like to speak now.
That's been pulled.
Oh, okay. And first, Vanetta Negranti, this says curriculum and professional development. Did you want to speak now or during the study session? Is this regarding the topic of the study session this evening? If you prefer to wait, that's fine, or if you'd like to come up right now, that's fine as well.
After looking at everything that was on that list, I don't know, I got appalled. I guess that's the closest thing I could give you. Okay, first of all, we have an obesity epidemic, and I unfortunately am part of it. Perhaps some of you think you are too. To students, and to some degree, to teachers. America is a country based on individuals. Paul Revere did not run through the countryside yelling, "Groupthink." It is actually to our advantage to encourage every person to use their individuality in the very best way possible. Peter Drucker says, "The individual is the central, rarest, and most precious capital resource of our society. Every single student in my classroom is a unique individual capable of incredible things. They cannot be herded into a common mold. They should not be treated in a common manner." Eleanor Roosevelt said, "Remember always that you not only have the right to be an individual, you have the obligation to be one." And yet everything I am looking at in some of these things is forcing teachers and students, I mean, this is a real concern of mine, into molds set in stone. Is this really what you want? I would hope not. It's the same thing to some degree in professional development. Now, I admit, I am from the days of the Underwood typewriter. I was grateful when they came out with that one IBM typewriter that would allow you to make corrections. I thought that was absolutely amazing. I learned to type in a restaurant for my grandparents and was noted for the day when I offered Pearl Bailey soup instead of Pearl Barley. And I noticed it, but I wasn't going to go back and correct it because it was too hard. And for those of you who are too young, Pearl Bailey was a marvelous 1940s singer. I am really grateful for people like Mark Coward. I'm really grateful for people like Eric Jarvis, who's been really kind to me. I don't learn real easily, but I adjust, and I'm pretty computer proficient at this point. But people, professional development should be geared to the individual, just as teaching should be geared to the individual.
Could you wrap up? Because we do have a lot to discuss this evening, and we'd like to be able to move on.
I am at the end of this. But bottom line, things like WestEd that force molds, I want the individual revered in our society. I don't want groupthink.
From Laguna Middle School, I just wanted to thank the school board, whoever it was, that sent us to the Q conference this week. Last week, five teachers from Laguna were able to attend Q, which is Computer Using Educators. It's been around for 29 years. And it was fantastic. I got a real good kickstart once again into technology. Lots of great speakers. One of the things that I came away with was that using technology requires lots of creativity, believe me. And it isn't just, I don't know what you want to say, but it just takes in this big scope of learners, and it's so exciting, and I really needed it again because the technology was starting to get me down. It was like websites, da-da-da, you know, all this stuff that we do on the computers, but after a while there's just not enough time for it. And it just kind of started me again. Since I've been back, I've done two super PowerPoints for my class, hooked up my DVD, my VCR, to my LCD. So I want to thank you for allowing us to attend Q. It was great.
We're glad it was A-OK. Thank you. Anyone else who wishes to address the board at this time? Okay. Seeing none, we'll move on to reports by school staff and student representatives. We have a couple of student representatives here. Nicole from Pacific Beach and Joe from Morro Bay High School. Nicole. Sorry.
Nicole is absent tonight. I'm Grace Weddle from Pacific Beach High School. We are currently at the end of our fourth marking period, which means that next week we'll start our new marking period. On Wednesday, March 28th, from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. is our open house. March 20th and the 21st, sophomores and juniors will be participating in CASI testing On February 17th and the 24th, the Rotary Club had a work day at our campus. The Rotarians, the Cal Poly Rotor Act, a few of our own students participated in the events that took that day. Mayor Romero, County Assistant Superintendent John Barnhart, and Jeff Spivak, the coordinator were present. They redid all our benches in the courtyard. They dug holes, rebricked the patio, put new flowers in the flower beds, and are giving us two concrete. Three mock trial students, including myself, attended the Teach Telethon. We had four art students who also attended, and I believe we received three grants. Our mock trial team is at an end, unfortunately, but our team will be holding a thank you lunch for our training coaches, Miss Jennifer Alton and Mr. Walt Millar. Let's see. 11 students have joined the Youth Exploration and Mentoring Program. It is put on by Big Brother and Big Sister. It's a new pilot program over the next 12 weeks for students from the ages of 16 to 19. They will be taking a class once a week for the next 6 weeks and job shadowing for the other 6 weeks. The students also have a mentor program that they will be working with them. The mentors will be working with them for over all 12 weeks. On March 19th, Dr. Joe Sabol, a retired Cal Poly professor, will be teaching the students how to graft fruit trees. Pacific Beach and its students are in process of having a memorial tree put in for a former classmate of mine who passed away last summer, Joe Moore. Onward. We have three Cal Poly tutors who volunteer every Friday. Over the course of the last 6 weeks, they have been working with about 12 to 15 students, and I believe that they will continue. The new math program, Accelerated Math, is getting positive feedback from students. They like that the teacher has more time to help with problems instead of grading papers, because you get instant feedback with it. So the students really enjoy that. And our yearbook is coming along. Thank you.
Thank you. I just wanted to, because Grace was too modest to say so, she was part of an attorney team that was devastating. A little problem with the scorekeepers, but we're not going to get into that. But we have some women attorneys who can hold their own in any courtroom. You did a great job, Grace.
Thank you. Well, I was excited about being here, and I was feeling comfortable about addressing you guys until I saw that you put me outside the little curtain.
We're sorry about that, Joe.
I'm not really sure what that means. Five of our seven teams from winter sports went to CIF playoffs and competed very well with sportsmanship. We're proud of them. Countywide, Mr. Tomac's physics class participated in the popsicle stick bridge building competition, and one of the groups from his class won the countywide competition with a popsicle stick bridge that withheld 1,341 pounds. So I guess that says something for his physics class. Last week was FFA week, and that went very well. Our FFA program is doing very well and is strong. And they also competed in the regional competitions up at Davis and did very well, from what I understand. This Friday, we have our spring sports assembly, which will kind of kick things off and introduce the teams to the school. On March 17th, we're having our Sadie Hawkins dance, and the theme is Cowboys and Indians, so we're looking forward to that. Setting up teepees and Old West facades. On March 23rd is Mock Rock. And that's always a big production for our school. We always get a lot of attendance from the community, not only high school students, and it seems to go over really well. On the 23rd through 24th, is the Fullerton Jazz Festival, and our jazz band will be competing in that, and they usually do pretty well from what I understand, so we're rooting for them. And from March 29th through the 31st, our spring play will be going on, which is The Curious Savage, and it's a comedy, and we invite everybody on the school board to come out and enjoy that. And that's all I have.
And Joe, at the risk of embarrassing you too much, I know that there's something special happening for you at the end of this month, and I'm pretty excited about it. Can I talk about that?
Yeah, you can talk about that.
Joe and I have known each other for quite a while. This will be like a preview for later. But Joe and I have known each other for, I don't know, probably 10 years maybe?
I can't believe my dad asked you to talk.
I know. we really met first time when I was an assistant Boy Scout leader and Joe joined our Boy Scout troop. He's just a great guy then and a great guy now. At the end of this month, Joe is undergoing a special court of honor to get his Eagle Scout, and I'm real proud of Joe. And for those of you who don't know, achieving the rank of Eagle Scout and Boy Scouts is a tremendous. Publicly offer you congratulations and
thank you.
Keep it up. Thanks.
I was told it started at 6:30, but. This week actually is our finals week because we're ending the second trimester, and today we had a full day, period one final, and then a full day of school, and then we have Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday is off school, and we're starting the new trimester on Monday. So all of our new sports are starting, and that's kind of exciting. Everyone's getting excited for that. And then we have our California High School Exit Exam tutorial still. We just had our Poetry Out Loud competition, and actually a friend of mine also moved on to the county, and she's also going on to the state. Her name is Claire Doyle, and my English teacher's pretty proud of her. And then on the 17th, we have our Sadie Hawkins dance as well. It's a disco rave theme, so we're kind of excited about that. And that week on Thursday, we also have dodgeball finals, which my school is really into. So, the 22nd of March, we're having the drama club show, The Three Musketeers, and it's going to be Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then we're pretty much just starting up a new trimester. That's the most exciting thing that's happening right now. And yeah, the Poetry Out Loud was kind of a very honorable thing for our school. So, that's all.
Thank you very much. As always, feel free to stay. I think this is going to be an interesting topic this evening, and I invite you to stay, but we also understand that you may have other obligations, and please feel free. Mr. Miller, status of the state budget.
I don't have anything at this time.
Okay, let's move on then to the action consent agenda. Please let me know if you'd like to pull something from that. Item number 3, approval of certificated and classified personnel items. Item number 4, approval to teach a class outside of credential authorization.
Pull.
Okay. Item number 5, acceptance of donations. Item number 6, disposition of surplus property. Item number 7, approval of furniture and equipment requests. Item number 8, approval of purchase orders. And item number 9, approval of warrants and payroll. Do I hear a motion?
Okay, I make a motion to approve 3, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
The motion's been made by Mr. Spadafore. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
That is correct. We have certain situations where we have to have a recognition from the board under certain sections of education code for people to teach outside their credential authorization. In these cases, these are individuals who have, like in the first case, many, many upper division college units and a very close credential in music teaching a theater class. So these are all highly qualified under No Child Left Behind and certainly qualified.
And I believe there's a process by which you make sure that when we approve these, that these are good, solid educators who know what they're doing.
Yeah, we couldn't bring them if that was not the case.
Thank you, Mr. Robinette. I move approval of item 4.
We'll move on to advanced agenda. Does anybody have any items they'd like to add to the advanced agenda at this time? I do have one. I would like us to begin the investigation of using electronic board agendas. There are several people that are doing that out there. I know California School Board Association is one of them, but not certainly the only one. I think it could increase community access, reduce paper and delivery times for the school board,
provide real-time presentations for us and the public at school board members, and I think it would save staff time as well. So I'd like to know if there's any support to begin that investigation of electronic board meetings and electronic boards. Okay, I see a little support here. Okay, great. Dr. Valentine, and perhaps you and I can talk about that, and we can start looking at ways of exploring that. Okay. Let's move on then to item number 12, reports by board members and administrators. Are there any administrators? Dr. Valentine.
Just want to note that this Thursday, the validation team will be visiting our own Laguna Middle School as part of their nomination for California Distinguished School. We look forward to that.
And that's great news, and we congratulate Laguna Junior High, who is our host this evening. Did I say junior high? I did. Middle school. Other people, Mr. Buckman.
Well, rather than the long list that I have, let me just cut it down to one or two things. I was lucky enough to participate out at Los Osos Middle School in Career Day as a presenter, along with a former...
Other board members. Ms. Dickinson.
My husband makes great ginger cookies, and you're all welcome to have one. They're right over there.
And I just wanted to say that several of the board members, including myself, were at the Save the Music concert last Sunday, two Sundays ago, and it was just a great, great concert. Really wonderful music from everybody who was involved. And then, as Janet talked about, I think most all of us were able to go to the Teach Telethon and really had a great time there, and glad to see that a lot of money was raised for our schools and for our children and for our teachers. Seeing no one else who wishes to speak at this time, we're going to take a short break while we reconfigure the room for the study session. And Dr. Matakovich, I think you're going to be directing that to us and helping us out there. So we'll take a short break and then we'll reconvene. First of all, I want to welcome everybody here, and I want to invite those of you who are not sitting at the table to participate as well. The purpose of a study session, from my perspective, is to inform the board on issues of interest and issues that we may or that we may be taking action on. It's to help, again, it's as a study session, it's to help inform the board. The board has stated prior to this that we will be ending the study session at 9 o'clock. What we believe is that gives us about 20 minutes to cover each of the areas that the board has expressed an interest in, as well as giving the board some time at the end to have discussions among themselves. I know that Dr. Valentine has some introductory comments, and so I'm going to invite Dr. Valentine to speak. I've asked Mr. Spadafore to set the timer for 20 minutes to keep us on track so that we're able to get through all of the information that we need to get through tonight and to be able to hear from everybody that would like to share with us. So with that, I'll let Dr. Valentine begin.
Well, I'll ask that you set the timer after I begin rather than before. Because I would really like the group to have a chance to say something. We appreciate the opportunity to bring a variety of invited guests to discuss the TOMIC statuses. Receive very different and unequal educations, and not just across school districts, but within them as well. It's commonly believed that we know more about what works in K-12 education than we actually deliver. I hope we can have a meaningful discussion of that, putting what we know works into operation. Almost no one believes that mandatory attendance for children combined with a curriculum and methodology which is invented separately in each classroom is a formula for success. And for that reason, I appreciate the definition of academic freedom suggested by Bruce Bedrigian, which reads, "Academic freedom occurs when a teacher is empowered to make professional judgments in his or her area of expertise in a sincere effort to teach state standards and district curriculum. Teachers employ this freedom to inspire, excite, and generate interest in their students. As teachers, we are not asking for the right to teach unrelated, controversial topics or use inappropriate materials in our classrooms. Rather, we simply hope to be treated as professionals who believe they can make a difference when empowered by an administration that believes teachers will offer meaningful input when invited to, to collaborate and explore possible improvements for our students' education. In Bruce's definition, we don't debate standards and we don't support incoherent or inappropriate instruction, but we do support exciting, inspiring, and interesting instruction and the collaboration of professionals on what works and what doesn't for our students. As we focus on the topics tonight, I hope we can stay focused on what there is in our system, which relates to all students having equal access to a rigorous curriculum in a school and district that really thinks about results and responds as a team when students don't learn. The background material for tonight's meeting describes our processes, who's involved and what's expected, and where the expectations come from. They're pretty specific. I hope the conversation can be specific about these things. And now I'm happy to open the discussion up to the first topic, which is curriculum development. We've described the composition of the District Curriculum Council, which formulates virtually all curricular recommendations for the district. We've described the makeup of the school site councils and management teams who develop each site's school improvement plan. And we've described the sources of input for strategic planning. Representatives from those groups are
material over, and I read about the representation, and I've served on site councils and done school improvement plans and a lot of those. And I guess what I'd like to see if we could get, if it's possible, that there's a consensus about how this process is working. Are we, you know, is it collaborative enough? Or are the people who are on the committee, do they have opinions on how this process of developing curriculum is working now?
Great. Would somebody like to break the ice?
Can I just say one quick comment to you?
Come on, Linda.
I'll try that again. My name is Linda Campeggi. I'm a teacher at Morro Bay High School, and I have no problem breaking the ice. Never have. I think what I'd like to address maybe covers several concerns. I'm not on the curriculum committee, but my understanding is that this meeting was a result of some issues and concerns that particularly Mr. Bedrigan brought up. So I have something prepared that I think will go quickly. As educators, we realize the intense public pressure regarding accountability in education and the need for that accountability. Showing our community the progress our students make in academic areas is a responsibility we should all expect and respect. Currently, at the high school level, students participate in the yearly CSTs, the CASI, as well as common assessments articulated through individual departments as well as our districts, such as the district writing assessment for English. In addition, students are individually assessed by their teachers. Teachers have accepted these assessments as part of our communication and accountability to our community. The concern arose with West Ed, which I understand the district has redesigned, but initially the concern was that West Ed appeared to be a forced, artificial assessment on top of what our teachers were already doing. During the first session of our West Ed Professional Development Day, it appeared to me that perhaps our central administrators didn't fully understand what the various academic departments at all three high schools and the middle schools had accomplished. Communication is key. If it is important to our school board to have one form of common assessment in every curriculum area at the high schools, rather than reinventing the wheel, the teachers could have collaborated on what they currently have in place and improved upon that. There's also a concern as to how much assessment is enough. Teachers want to be involved in curriculum development and textbook adoptions. However, teachers want to know that what they are working on is of direct value to the students and not a repetition of what is already in place. Furthermore, if our board is dedicated to common assessments for all schools, then it must realize that the data needs to be examined every year and the assessments need to change according to the needs of the current population of students. Anything less than that, and we are back to one standard test that is no longer targeting the current needs of the students. There's one more issue that needs to be addressed. Education is not a factory process. We do not spit out standardized students all with the same achievement level. That is an impossibility. The unique creative strengths of a variety of teachers help students develop their own uniqueness. Teaching is a creative art. A good teacher bends, twists, redirects, flows, and inspires according to the needs of the students he or she is privileged to teach. As a culture, we must return to seeing that each student has beautiful strengths to develop instead of seeing students as a mass that must all be taught in a robotic form. I want to thank all of you for taking time tonight to listen to the concerns of various people.
I guess I have a question to help us start out. One of the things that concerns me and one of the questions I have is if we agree that accountability is a good thing and here to stay, does curriculum development drive accountability, or does accountability drive curriculum development? And I'm wondering if somebody can answer that question for me. Or, yeah, please.
Well, first of all, people, I think you're just reinventing the wheel. We have testing. Our students are tested and tested and tested. Star testing. Our kids are hours and hours and hours of testing. Why are you reinventing something? They are being tested. You want a commonality of testing? It's coming to you. It's required.
Mr. Millar?
Did everyone get a chance to see the administration's material in the board material backup? Okay. Within that discussion, to me, and somebody help me here, is the sense that the assessments we're currently using are so variable from site to site and grade level to grade level that making some coherent judgments about student needs and responses to those student needs are difficult to make, and therefore the administration's professional development and other efforts, I guess including West Ed, was to derive some more consistent assessments from site to site and grade level to grade level. Am I right about that?
Why?
Well, let's just deal with my question first. You know, why, as Professor Irwin Corey said, is a two-part question for those people who remember Professor Irwin Corey. He was a comedian, and I'm not. The reason I want to stick with my question is because the why part of it is external to a large extent to us. I mean, we're not sitting around coming up with these ideas. We're trying to deal with external legal constraints on us, and we don't want it to interfere with what you all have to do in the classroom, but we still have to make sure we're administering the school district according to relevant laws. So I still want to make sure I understand, does the administration feel that we need more coherent assessments than we are currently getting?
Basically, we as administrators took a look at what we were doing across all school sites, particularly at the secondary level. And in answer to your question, Walter, we felt there was a need for some commonality so we understood what the core essential standards are that we're delivering in language arts and math. As you can see from your handout, you look at 11th grade English content standards, and you can see the list that goes on and on of standards. And staff across the district was expressing difficulty in terms of honing into what were those core standards. Principals asked, you know, what can we do collectively in order to organize ourselves in a way that can make sense out of these standards, supply our teachers with support, and support the collaboration time that we have built into the school, the weekly school calendar. So we took a couple years to look for a model that we felt would be appropriate in terms of addressing the core standards and providing an opportunity to come up with common assessments in a way that we could, in fact, provide a common understanding in terms of what our students' achievement is throughout the year, with the ability to look at student results, to engage in a conversation over what our students are accomplishing, and to provide the teachers the opportunity to to talk about what kids were able to know and be able to do and what were the areas they needed to target. And in fact, once they had that collaborative conversation, they could identify the resources necessary in order to move forward. So it was through this search that we came up with the West Ed model, but more importantly, so we across the district could collaborate on our student results, gear our resources to the important areas that we needed to target instructionally, and then to develop a plan that in fact could support our classroom teachers. And Diane, Pete, you're at the table. If you want to add to that, would you like to? Is that pretty much?
Now, that may have been the attempt through the West Ed process, is to kind of get some, for lack of a better word, standardization. But the process as it was delivered was that the presenter started really with the state standards and how many of those items were on the state test. There was no real question of which of these standards in actuality are the most valuable ones that we teach. It was really more driven by the idea of which have the most items on the state test. Now,
Jim, let me finish.
May I finish? Thank you. All right. It's just that's the way the structure went. So that sort of addresses somewhat of your question. How is this driven? Is it driven by the assessment, or is it driven by some standards, or how is this curriculum determined? Well, certainly that portion of it was, in my opinion, more driven by what appeared on the CST, the California State Test, and that's my response.
Let me just ask you, do you agree with the administration's intent that there was a need for a better common assessment across the district?
Well, across the district, perhaps, but what was already ongoing at the high school is that, at least at Morro Bay, and I'm almost certain that it was at all the secondary schools, is that we were coming up with common assessments. We have core curriculum, core novels, core, matter of fact, we came up with particular stories, poems, and so forth for each grade level that we were going to teach and assess. So, yes, it was, I don't think that there was absolute coordination between Morro Bay and, let's say, San Luis or Laguna and Los Osos Middle School. So the answer to that is probably not district-wide. And I'm not even absolutely certain that that's a desirable goal. I think that's a question that needs to be looked at or at least discussed.
I'm going to speak, Bruce, first. I'm Ivan Simon. I'm an English and history teacher at San Luis Obispo High School. Echoing a little bit of what Jim says, I think the concern many teachers have is that we confuse data with knowledge. We're bombarded with data. If I had time to just look at data, maybe I could figure something out from the data. But I like to talk to my students. I like to interact with my students. I like to read what they have to say. And it seems as if the direction that we're going as a country, and what I appreciate about our school district, is I think we're stronger. We have bright people that don't need to listen to others. And when we just look at data and re-examine data, and because it's numbers, it must have meaning, I think we confuse what education is about. I shared a quote at a board meeting a month or two ago by Henry Giroux, where he said, "Corporate education opposes a critical approach to learning because it cannot be standardized, it cannot be routinized, it cannot be reduced to a prepackaged curriculum. On the contrary, a critical and transformative education practice takes seriously the abilities of teachers to theorize, contextualize, and honor their students' diverse lives. The relationship of teachers of the same course should be as colleagues and not clones. Education is a process, not a prepackaged product. Public school teachers are hamstrung by a tepid common curriculum designed by a committee insensitive to the needs of any given classroom or the talents of any given teacher. Now, that's pretty blunt, and I think our district does a great job of not falling into that. And what I hope that we don't feel the need to do is to change the way we have allowed our teachers to have the academic freedom to practice what we feel is in the best interest of our students.
You know, and I still would like to get back, because I would like to focus on curriculum at this point. The question for me is, for instance, we know that the state only supports textbook purchases that align with the state standards chosen by the textbook committee, right? And if we choose to buy textbooks other than those, then we we don't get our state subsidy for that. So there, in a sense, our curriculum is somewhat guided in that sense by the state standards that we get, and then supported by the textbooks that we purchase, guided by the curriculum committee. So within that, if that's the framework we're looking at right now, how does the curriculum, as we have it, support the notion of the professional teacher using his or her knowledge to support a curriculum which I believe we are obligated by state standards to teach? Bruce.
Speaking of the textbooks, we have to be very careful at that point that it isn't the textbook publishers that drive the curriculum. It should be the experts, and it should be the teachers that drive the curriculum. They're the ones that have been trained. They're the experts in the field, and they should be the ones that step by step are developing and building this curriculum. Second of all, when the central administration and the principals felt that they needed more common assessment, the first step they should have done is they should have come and asked the teachers. The teachers wrote this curriculum, and to go ahead and make changes to the curriculum without asking the teachers, I wrote this on concerning the SIP plan, and I put, according to our SIP plan, our goal should be to improve the skills and abilities of our low-performing students. See, that was our target audience. We believe our resources should be used to target these subgroups instead of a blanket testing approach to our already over-tested students. From our discussions, several alternative solutions have surfaced. When I say our, I'm talking about the Teachers Association. We've been talking about this. How do we address these needs? How do we meet the goals of the SIP plan? One idea is to hire teacher aides who are placed strategically throughout our district to work with struggling students who are often lost in large classes. Another idea is to reduce class sizes in those classes that contain large numbers of underachieving students. Another possibility is to arrange teacher in-services that are outside of the teaching day so teachers do not have to miss their classes repeatedly, thus maintaining a high level of instruction and providing relevant advanced training. Math and English teachers, is 9 days of school, actually 8 days because it was cut down, 8 days of school out of their classroom, and that was significant impact. Well, what many of our teachers are worried that when our students have been testing well, they've been doing everything that we asked, and if we keep asking and keep playing more and more tests to look at this data, and I received the data. I looked at the data after the West Ed. And I looked at it and I thought, and I went back and I spent hours looking at each student, what they responded, and I came away with the conclusion that there's a lot of paper here, there's a lot of colored ink here, but it's not telling me anything that I didn't already know. We must remember that testing is not a learning mode, it is a measuring mode. Our students should be learning a wide variety of skills. Instead, teachers are being in service to teach to a narrow field of standards presented on a benchmark test that was created for failing schools. How is this West Ed Scantron related and supported? program going to help our students learn anything relevant from our state curriculum. Instead, let us call it what it is: a thinly veiled approach to encourage teachers to teach to the test, to produce results that will conform to an increasingly unrealistic and impossible goal set by No Child Left Behind.
Having standards does not mean standardized delivery. The term framework, we used to talk about California frameworks in all these areas. The term framework, I think, is a good word to keep in mind. And the inside the frame is going to be art. And all the, and it's going to vary in every classroom. Now, if you look at the standards, we have English standards in front of us here. Listening and speaking, this is 11th grade. By the way, and Bruce's definition, which I think is overly carefully worded, but of academic freedom, it says unrelated controversial topics. I hope that those words aren't linked in everyone's mind, unrelated controversial, because there's a lot of controversial topics that are related. And if you look at listening and speaking, comprehension, it says, number one, recognize strategies used by the media to inform, persuade, entertain, and transmit culture, e.g. advertisements, perpetuation of stereotypes, use of visual representations, special effects, language. Evaluate advertising and marketing. One, two, analyze the impact of the media on the democratic process, exerting influence on elections, creating images of leaders, shaping attitudes, the local, state, and national levels. Standard 1.3, interpret and evaluate the various ways in which events are presented and information is communicated by various image makers, graphic artists, documentary filmmakers, illustrators, news photographers. Those are going to be some controversial topics. And what I want to know from teachers, you know, you're not just going, here's your book, and you're going to chapter one. And, you know, we all do that part of the time. But if you're teaching to the standards, I think you should be able to see what's happening in the world, what's going on in current events, you know, what relates to this standard that's totally hot, and be able to, you know, bring in a video of what was on the news last night, or, you know, this and that you can, you know. I've had 80 college classes, you know, counting undergraduate and graduate. I'm sure you guys have too. You've lived a while and you've experienced things, and you can put together, you know, packages to address these things. And I'm wondering if you have the freedom to put those packages together in a spontaneous way. Bring in clips, bring in pieces of literature, you know, magazines, you know. And do you have that freedom, or do you have to? That's what I'd like to know.
Some concern that I have to see if we can, in my mind, bring this to a point that may help everyone, especially the board, understand the larger picture in the district relative to these four areas. I can understand concern about West Ed, but is this only about West Ed? Are we here tonight to discuss, is the system that we have in this district, the development of curriculum, the adoption of materials, site plans, strategic development, does our system work? Does it need to be changed? Is something better? Is the necessary information through the school sites, is it moving up into the places where it needs to be, so the right question, the right needs, the necessary information is being provided, discussed, brought forward? I personally don't want to. I don't want to see this as an evaluation all night of West Ed. There may be something out there that's better, but my need as a board member is, tell us, is it working? Are you able to develop curriculum that inspires the students? Are you able to discuss among other teachers and your administrators changes that need to be made so you can address those problems in the classroom? Are things working? Do they need to change? Is the system set up in a way that all of that can happen so you come out with the best product available so the students in that each and every classroom benefit the most? That's what I really need to hear. West Ed is something that may have been a mistake, but that's something that can be discussed in another format But tonight, I need to see a bigger picture of what's happening in the classrooms, and is this system working?
And Heather, I'm going to recognize Heather.
Hello. All right. From a student standpoint, I feel safe in saying that no student wants to sit through a class where the teacher just dictates standards to them and has no creative freedom. But I know that students don't want to sit through a class where the teacher has so much creative freedom that you never know what you'll be learning next. When you have two separate English classes at school, say, or math or anything for that matter, kids want to go and learn what they're supposed to be learning. They want creative freedom. I'm totally an advocate for creative freedom with teachers, but I want to make sure that what I'm learning will help me later in life, and that I'm not just listening to someone ramble on about things that students, I know that sounds bad, but students might not feel is very important. And I've been through classes like that before where I go and I'm not really sure what I'm learning, because I just feel like I'm just sitting there and nothing's really going on. So I don't know the best way to express this, but I know creative freedom for teachers is a great thing but too much of it can be a terrible thing. Yeah.
My name is Jim Nett, and I'm currently teaching science here at Laguna Middle School. And I'd like to try and answer all four of the questions I've heard posed by the board members. That's why I came tonight, was to try and answer your questions. Mr. Malar brought up the question of, do we really need assessments to be coordinated across the district so that we can use that? I find as a teacher, 10 years ago when I started here, they had the science teachers from my site here in Los Osos Middle School meet over several dates, and we put together standardized assessments ourselves for the curriculum we were teaching on the state standards 10 years ago. Over the last several years, we've kind of individualized those, and if you honestly looked at them now, I think we're hitting the same themes, but we all have developed our own individual assessments because as teachers, we're trying to meet the needs of our specific population. And if you look across this district, it's varied from site to site. And I think teachers need that because part of what I've been trained professionally is to give an assessment so I can get feedback from my current students at how I'm doing, how they're attaining the standards, and then alter or modify my teaching style to still teach those standards in a way that improves the performance of the people I'm teaching. So a district-wide unified assessment, I don't think we'll meet that goal. In a way, I think it will take away from that. We get our standards from the state. We have the wonderful curriculum council or committee here that works on those. The textbooks are adopted. But I think what really goes on in the classroom is what someone like I was hired and interviewed for. It was the personal experience and the training that I bring to the site to take those standards, that curriculum, and look at my students and engage them and create experiences, because experience is the best teacher. We're not talking about rote learning or memorizing facts, but the lifelong learners we want our students to be. And that really comes from the individual style of the teacher, as was pointed out, in engaging students and giving them something they can work with and hang on to and carry on. And I think the subject of academic freedom to me comes up because I think if we try and work it on a district level, we're going to be looking out here at one size fits all, and I don't think that will work in the classroom.
I think at the elementary time they do need more, or at the elementary level they need more time to collaborate on the curriculum. We've done a good job at our middle and high school of providing collaboration time, but we really just don't have that at the elementary level. And I know the district is aware of that, and we're trying to make steps to make that happen. But I think that's really important. I continually hear that our curriculum is huge, and I can't possibly teach everything that's in the curriculum. So I think it is important for teachers to have that collaboration time to talk about what is essential in the curriculum to be taught. And then we need to be able to have time to, I think, assess our students and see if they're getting that. And then if they're not, figure out what our response is going to be and how we're going to help those students. And I also think right now is a very, very important time to be doing this, because we have so many teachers in our district who are so close to retirement age and have so many years of experience. and so much expertise. We really need to harness that expertise and use them to help us to figure out what is essential. And so that as we go forth and we bring all these new teachers in, they really have kind of something to work with.
So from my perspective, one of the things that we've been hearing a lot about is our professional learning communities. Is that the sort of thing that you're thinking about, where teachers collaborate and work together to develop common assessments and be able to help each other to teach better?
It is, and you know, I've been really fortunate to attend the training by Timothy Canold and Rick DeFore this year, and both of the different response to intervention and professional learning communities. I went with two different teams from my school, and we went and we were so excited by what they had to say and how we were going to go back and present this to our staff and try and work as a staff to come up with a program that would work for Del Mar. And that was one of the things that they kept saying, is that the neat thing about response to intervention is that it should be developed at your site level for meeting the needs of your individual school. And the California Educator this month had a great series of articles on response to interventions, and one of the things they said is it works best where educators develop the program from scratch rather than adopt a packaged program or have it imposed from above. And the way that we have been brought into the professional development with response to intervention and professional learning communities, I feel like we are being empowered as a site to start going forth and figuring out what we need for our schools. And I will say there's been a little worry at the elementary level after hearing about West Ed, and you know, do we need to use that model? Are we able to come up with something on our own? And I think the district has been responsive to that, and it does seem like we are going to be able to figure out what works best through us. But again, the need for collaboration time to make this happen, because that's another thing that's continually brought out in a lot of the articles, is that in order for this to work, teachers need to have the time built within the day in order to make this happen successfully.
Don?
One of the questions, and we're on the part, we're still on the part, about curriculum development, and I did want to say that our curriculum council is terrific, and from an elementary perspective, I'm really impressed with it. I know I served on it for 3 years, and Janice served on it, Elizabeth Morin served on it, so we kind of rotate that position. But one of the great things I think about that is that we surface issues at the curriculum council, things that we're talking about tonight. I mean, we've gone through a number of years where we developed some common assessments for the district, like the district reading assessment, the DWA or the district writing assessment, and then we talked about, and we did get teacher input, and we spent like a year talking about the scholastic reading inventory assessment, and none of these are perfect tools, okay? But they do give us a sense of commonality across the district. And when we calibrate our papers and when we do those assessments and we train the people to do the assessments, then we're all pretty much on the same page in terms of trying to develop an understanding of where a student's reading level is or where their writing level is or where their math level is. And I do want to compliment Barry Pendley and the Instructional Services Department, because they developed this whole program called Assessment Solution, and the California that was based on the California Summative Assessments of Language Arts and Math. And what it does is that if the teacher gives those assessments on a periodic rate throughout the school year, they can get excellent feedback. In, we were talking about this earlier, not just, well, where's your kid scoring, but where does the kid need help? And that's the key piece for us. And if I were to make one suggestion, is that I think we need to settle on certain assessments, and we should stop trying new ones. And I don't know how to say that tactfully, but, you know, I'm not opposed to doing new things, but it's like you get everybody trained and you get them calibrated and they understand the system, and then it's like, well, okay, now we're going to look at something else. And until there's a reason to look at something else, I think we ought to really polish what we're doing and do it well. And I'm really impressed with the council because they talk about things like this. And they bring it up and they hash it out. I mean, I had a teacher talking to me yesterday about the DWA, and are all the schools on the same page? And are they all doing it the same way? And are they all submitting the highest paper of the year? Or are they submitting a certain paper that was designated on a certain date? And are we doing the same thing? And because if we're not, then why are we doing it? And if it's to guide instruction and to help teachers and to help kids, then I think we have to have a common assessment for those different things. So, thanks.
Bruce, and then if we could get you two folks, and then I'd like to wrap up and move on. I know we've been talking a lot about professional development, but I would like to move on to that topic. Okay. So, Bruce and
Janice Brown, Del Mar. First, I want to address a comment that I heard about these programs being developed for schools that are failing. Well, we're fortunate that our schools aren't failing. However, we do have some students that are failing at every school. And when I think of academic freedom, what supersedes that is the right of a student to learn. And not just the failing students, but the students that already have mastered the standards, they shouldn't be sitting in the classroom while the failing students are being remediated. So I think differentiation applies here, as well as the response to intervention. I think those all go hand in hand. I'm wondering if some of the disagreement doesn't stem from the basic differences of philosophy of education. I've heard transformative education mentioned, but the reality of it right now is that we have a set of standards where we have to impart to our students basic skills and knowledge so that they can be ready to go out into this global economy that we're in. And so I just think we have to adapt to that, and testing doesn't always have to be a separate device. It can be embedded into the curriculum. That's what I want to say for now.
Okay, thanks, Bruce. Okay.
Thanks, Janice. I just wanted to commend Janet and Don on their comments about the curriculum as far as teacher collaboration goes, because it is essential to deliver the curriculum in a seamless way. Teachers have to have time to collaborate. We've been able to do this with our late start days and collaboration time at secondary. We've been able to do this at the middle schools. We have not been able to do this at the elementary schools. And the association now is in a difficult, awkward position because we've gone ahead and already approved one elementary school to go ahead and allow teachers to basically deviate from our contract and go ahead. And now we have a second school of teachers. They're going ahead and they want to go ahead and do what this other school did, which was they've taken minutes of their own time before the school day, minutes after the school day of their own personal time, and they've gone ahead and said, we will give those minutes up so we can have time to collaborate, because they know how essential collaboration is to deliver the curriculum. What we would like to do is work with the administration to build in collaboration time for elementary teachers.
Oh, Dave, I'm sorry. I will say, please, if you'd like to speak and I don't see you, it's difficult for me to get to everybody. Just kind of wave your hand around and I'll catch you, or somebody up here will remind me and poke me that I need to get you to talk. Dave?
Yeah, Dave Furby from Morro Bay High. Just trying to stay to this topic. I mean, as far as answering the question of are we doing a good job with the curriculum development process, I've been through three frameworks and, you know, three adoptions of new state standards and in my 24-year career. And I think we're on target. I mean, as far as the state sets the standards, you guys adopt the standards as our curriculum for the district. And then we come up with the materials that we're going to use from possible things that are available that will get funded. And then we go for it. And the teachers bring, I mean, everybody has their own personality. And I think their personalities shine through and their strengths shine through. And that's how you get the diversity in the classroom and the different types of instruction that you're going to see, even though people are teaching the same thing. So I think as far as that process goes, it's fine. I don't think you've had any trouble with that over the last 24 years. In fact, you guys have gone down some roads that probably we shouldn't have gone down. There was a curriculum back in 95 that went to IMP and CPM. And what killed that was that the state came back with testing that didn't fit that model. And, you know, the pendulum swings back and forth. Right now it's swung towards assessment and it's swung towards standards. And so that's where we are. And that's how the game goes. So I think the system's working the way it should. And as far as curriculum goes, we're on target.
Thank you. I'm Tom Weinschenk from San Luis Obispo High School, and I'm an elective teacher, and one of the things I'd like to bring to the conversation is that perspective that there is a lot of education out there still to be discussed that doesn't even have a page in the state standards. So there are no state standards for foreign language, for example, but yet colleges find those extremely important as a litmus test to whether students are able to go on. And one of the things I, as a parent, and I want to say right now that my son's teachers and administrators and counselors have been absolutely fantastic. We've just had a wonderful education from all of them. And I can't believe the great work you guys do in the elementary schools. But I think it would be generally true to say over the last few years there's been more of a concentration in elementary school on math and English curriculum. And that has been to a disadvantage to other elective programs which may not have a state standard attached to them, including art, science, and so forth. And I think that should be addressed, because I think we have to not just think that, well, if it's not specifically in the state standards, that it's not important or worthwhile. And I know that there is a lot of art and other things in elementary schools, but I think you know, when my son says, "Daddy, why are we always doing math?" and of course that's not always true. He exaggerates. There is some truth to that. I also, you know, think that as a school we need to be bold and be strong enough and confident, because we are excellent teachers and we have excellent community, we have excellent administration, to deny at some point that maybe we cannot, or to say that we cannot teach every state standard. In fifth grade, for example, there are 181 standards for mathematics, and there's not even 181 days in the school year to teach them all. And my son is doing the best he can. He has a tutor. He's doing a great job. He has a great teacher, but it's very, very challenging. And when you hear that at back-to-school night that what my son is going to be learning in fifth grade, I learned in ninth grade, you wonder, how did that happen? And is that what we as educators want to do? So I'd like to bring that issue up, because I think what's driving the crux of the emphasis on these common assessments, these various other things that deal with math and English is this test, because essentially when we take the test we are taking math and English tests primarily. Also, I think if you talk to a science teacher, and there are many here that would like to see more science in the curriculum especially in middle school, because that is important for those kids as they get into the high school level. So my perspective is, let's look at the whole education of a student, including elective programs that may not be just on those state standards. But again, the teachers, the administrators, as a school and as a district, I think we've done a great job working with all those state standards.
I know that Joe and Brianna want to say something. I'd like to ask you something really quickly, Tom. I know that we have this plethora of state standards, but she said that, for instance, I mean, I doubt that there's a Latin standard.
Well,
and so my question is, in areas where we don't have state standards, how is the curriculum decided? And if you could give me a brief answer, I'd sure appreciate it.
Yeah, what I do is I look to my national standards, or national standards for the teaching of Latin. And so when we're asked to write curriculum for Latin, which we are, or for other languages and other elective programs, we go to the curriculum committees of our particular disciplines. And so I go to those national standards for Latin. So essentially, those elective teachers like myself who are needing to align our program with state standards, we use other states. We use other standards, usually national ones.
I guess I'm here because I'm a student, so I'll offer a student's perspective. He said that there's 181 standards for fifth grade math, and that there's just not even that many days to teach them. And as a student, I would not be very disappointed if we didn't get to all the standards. So you know. But one thing I did want to say, and this kind of touched on something that somebody said earlier, I heard somewhere that 74% of everything you learn in high school is baloney and you'll never use it in your real life. Now, I don't know if that's true or not. In fact, I doubt it is. But when you're getting fed prepackaged curriculum, it feels like that. And I know for me, at least, it's real hard to sit through a lecture when you cannot figure out where you're going to use this ever. And you're being told you need to learn this just because you need to know it, not because you're ever going to need it. And I think that there's a way to take that prepackaged curriculum and make it not so cookie cutter form fit, I guess.
How do you know that you won't need to know something? And maybe that's a question, a discussion you and I could have later. But I think that, you know, that is that to me is sort of a crux of an issue, is there are a lot of things that I didn't learn in high school that I really regret not having learned.
I would say that when the teacher can't offer a better explanation other than you need to know this because you need to know this, but I think if the teacher can say, you might need to know this because it applies to this, and if you're ever doing this in your life, this is where this will... If you can make a real-life application, I don't know. I know in my education, at least, there have been moments where I've been like, hey, you know, maybe I'll use that someday. And when you can't see that, there's no motivation to sit through the lecture and keep taking notes, and for me, at least.
I just want to say that from a student perspective, we are learning things in the classroom, like... It's not like just a free-for-all. And some of the classes where I've learned the absolute most, I have not seen one state standard number on like the whiteboard. And the classes where I've retained hardly any information, you are every day learning the state standards out of the book. And so I just feel like it is like a huge volume of state standards kind of thing that is just impossible to like go through all of them. Exactly what I know exactly what he's talking about, 181 state standards. Like, to get through all of them, my teacher, every day, out of the book, this is the exact state standard. But the things that I, like, have retained and are learning are, like, not like that at all. And I also just wanted to say, I don't think the standardized testings, no matter how you change them or keep them or whatever, at the high school level, are not very reflective of the student's achievement. Because there are kids that are making designs during the state standard testing. They are not taking it seriously. It's not their grade. It's not, like, the SATs, I think, would even be a better, like, benchmark test. Like, I had to take a benchmark test in English. Not even the teacher took it seriously. Like, it doesn't feel like those things, like, he said, try your hardest, but you know what I'm saying. I mean, you know what I'm, like, those things just, they feel... Like, what's the point? And I do not think the state tests are reflective whatsoever.
Yeah, Chris has allowed me to ask Grace, what's the PB experience like for you as far as curriculum delivery?
I did attend San Luis High and Morro Bay High, and now I'm currently at Pacific Beach. And let me tell you, there's great teachers at every school who teach differently. Being at Pacific Beach, it's... you do have your creative juices flowing, kind of, and you do have your state standards, and we get to those. We do, you know, we see those, but I think that each student learns it at their own pace at Pacific Beach, though. The teachers take the time and teach you, you know, this is what's going on, and they have a lot of current events to go with it, and they teach you out of the book. They teach you texts. They give you the textbook. They give you books. But I think that a lot of creativity and a lot of the teachers' personalities have a lot to do with it, too. It's not a molded, cookie-cutter teaching style. It's very almost independent, but it does have that structure where they teach the curriculum.
I would try to answer John's question, which was, is it working? Is the whole curriculum thing working? As I see it, no. College kids are dropping out of colleges left and right. Never been higher. For the first time in American history, we have less per capita Americans with college degrees. We've always had an increase until recently. And when did it start? When we adopted standards. Dr. Valentine, I love you, but we can't take the standards off the table. They didn't come from nowhere, okay? There was a lot of politicking involved, and it was ugly. If you know anybody who was on those committees, it's an embarrassment. If you look at the tests, they're an embarrassment. To teach to those tests and have everything driven by these tests, it means, you know, we're not critical thinkers. You don't want teachers who aren't critical thinkers. One of my props. I love props. It's a movie now with Hilary Swank, but it's a book. This is about a teacher who broke all the rules and got kids to think and write and change their lives. We can do that too. But you can't do it if you're thinking only in terms of test scores. San Luis High, we have a great system of accountability. It's called We Walk the Streets of Scolaris. And we see the kids that we graduate, and I ask them, every one of them, how'd you do in chemistry? That means something. I look at the test scores and I go, they mean little less than nothing, because the tests are horribly written, they're for political motives, people are making profits on them that shouldn't be making profits on them, they're kicking back the money to politicians so that they can keep getting reelected so they can give them more test takers. The whole system stinks. Now, we can do something about that as a board. You can say, look, let's put some faith in these people. Let's put some trust in teachers. Let's try to hire the smartest teachers we can. Stanford University has a program right now. If you agree to teach for 2 years, they'll write all your debts off. Wouldn't it be nice if those hundreds of kids were going to come to our place? I think that's what we want to see. We want to see smart people. Give them the freedom. That's why it's not working. Because right now, everything is seen through the lens of testing. That's accountability, and it's not. It's about political corruption. That's what it's about. It's about more people padding their wallets. And it's wrong, it's immoral, and it shouldn't be happening. Real accountability means when you go to the next level, can you succeed? We have measures of that. We have lots of measures of that. San Luis High 1 year had less kids taking remedial English in the CSU than any other school in the state. Somehow that doesn't get in the paper, but somehow these test scores do. And they're lousy tests. That's wrong. It's immoral. And everything we're doing in curriculum, to answer your question finally, John, sorry, was to answer the question, right, is it working? Well, I submit it's not. We've had 10 years of these standards, and they have not, they're not producing more college graduates. To me, that's real accountability. If you've got a better definition for it, oh, you could argue, okay, I'll give you one more. Can all graduates go out and win wars? That's accountability. They seem to be doing okay. Can they hold jobs? That's accountability. But to look at these tests and say that they're measuring something, well, I'm sorry. They're not. The kids don't take them seriously. I'm glad someone else said it. When you see a bunch of state standards and you have to, you know, teach to them, you're going, I don't care about this. It's not going to affect my grade. I don't blame you. I think that's what smart kids, that's what I would do. I shouldn't say it out loud publicly because I try to push the kids. This is serious. This is important. There's an administrator that I care about whose job depends upon this. And if you're going to do it, take them seriously. But the fact of the matter is, it's all about political greed. And test companies are making a lot of money. They're kicking it back to the politicians, and it's wrong. Thanks.
I know that we've been touching on professional development. I'd like... It's all interrelated. I would, though, like to get to guidelines for teachers in the classroom, and then I'd also like to find out how our teacher evaluation system supports creative teaching. So, Mr. Buckman?
Thank you very much. I'm not sure. I wasn't sure, in fact, until the last teacher had to ask this. And one of the things that attracted me to the board was the fact that there is a strategic plan in place, and in that strategic plan, the number one goal is to close the achievement gap. And by holding up that movie, you made it clear for me, and not all the children in all the classrooms get to have the teacher that stands on the desk and jumps up and down or does whatever it takes. And so my question is, how do we somehow get for all the children, especially those that are socioeconomically disadvantaged, make sure that they also get the opportunity to succeed? How do we ensure that what's being taught in classroom A by a teacher that's great and is going to end up in a movie is also getting taught in classroom B, and those kids have the same opportunity to succeed?
You can't hire every teacher to be Mr. Wonderful, but I'll tell you one way to make sure they're all bad: make them teach to a test.
Great. And Judy, I'm going to give Judy a chance to talk now.
You know, one thing that strikes me tonight is if when I look at the standards for English in the tests.
Mrs. Goya?
Yes. My name is Susan Goya, and I'm an educator from... I have so much background, I don't even know where to begin. But I'm going to start with when I was teaching at Northern Arizona University, and I was teaching curriculum classes. And one of the assignments that I gave my students was to pick three states and compare and evaluate those state standards. And there's 40 students in a class, so they overlap a lot, but you get to look at all 50 states. Right? And what we found was, and what inspired me to give this assignment, was that my years in Department of Defense, as a Department of Defense teacher. We have teachers in our Department of Defense schools that come from all the states, and we're trained in all kinds of colleges of education. What do we find out? The individual state standards, well, every state's about the same. They're all saying just about the same thing. They may say it in few words or more words, but they're all saying just about the same thing. We all have the same expectations across the country for what we want our students to be able to know and take into their adult lives. Now, I was really concerned about the student who's telling me that the state standards are written on the blackboard and that the teacher is going, okay, we're covering this standard. I think that should not be a burden to students. You can code your own lesson plans with the state standards if you want, but I don't see any reason to burden the students with that. Another thing about state standards, or any standard, is they're very well integrated. If you want to read just through the 11th grade standards that we have here, you can find where Adrian read us about advertising in the media and evaluating what they're trying to get across to us, and then you can go into a novel and what is the author's theme in the novel. You can go into a persuasive piece and how is the author using that to persuade. I mean, they're all integrated. So to think that we have to have them in an itemized fashion, I think, is really a burden to teachers and a burden to students as well. And electives, I'm really sorry to come home from 20 years overseas and see what's happened to the electives in our schools.
Do you think that that we don't offer broad enough electives, and that the plethora of, as I said before, the plethora of state standards are fairly common throughout the United States, and that that I think what you're saying is that you're disappointed that there isn't more flexibility in teaching those. Okay, I'd really like to move on to professional development. It's almost 8 o'clock.
I have one more comment.
If you could make it brief, please.
I will.
Thank you.
He was talking, or someone was talking, about hiring the best teachers. We're worried about the teachers that are about to retire, but there are teachers out there who are mid-career, not that close to retirement, and cannot get hired in any school because they're too expensive. What are we going to do? They're out there, and they've moved on. They're out there selling insurance or doing something else because they can't wait any longer for the schools to notice that they're out there.
And fortunately for our district, and I think Mr. Robinette could talk about this, I think most of the new teachers we hire at about eight to 10 years of experience. So we're very fortunate. Janice, if you'd like to speak, and then I really would like to move on to have a few minutes on professional development, knowing that how the feeling of the room is about West Ed.
Just from an elementary teacher perspective, I think the standards and the curriculum are absolutely working. This is my 21st year teaching, and third grade, it was not uncommon. I was over in the valley with a population that's similar to what we are having right now, but it was not uncommon for me to get two or three kids in my classroom that could not read a word. Okay, they couldn't decode. They had no word call ability at all, and that would be unheard of now. Even my lowest students, my most struggling, they can read fluently pretty much on grade level. Now they have problems with comprehension, but so it's a dramatic increase of what they can do now.
Right, and I think, Paul, I'll be right with you. I think one of the things that the board has really come down strongly on, and I know that it's a concern throughout California, is closing the achievement gap. And I know in this particular school district, the information that Dr. Valentine has shared with the board is showing us that we're seeing an increase, not surprisingly, in the minority majority of California. And our
testing, a teacher had a unit, they tested at the end of it, how a student did, told you a lot about how you were teaching and how that student was performing. By giving a state test at the end of the year, by the time that test comes up, it's all about retention, it's all about repetition. So, and one other major thing, which is motivation. An embedded test that's between a teacher and a student is about a relationship and motivation to tell you what I know about our relationship. A test that comes from the state that's once a year that may even cover some of that material is not a relationship-based test. It is just an activity. And our high schools are not performing on those tests anywhere near what they're capable of because those kids could care less. They know they don't need to do well on the STAR test because their SAT test scores will get them exempt from all the CSU remedial courses. You'll get a kid, like my kids, who got below standard on STAR testing and were told in that little form that comes home that they have to take remedial classes when they tested over 700 in their SATs. What does that tell you? It tells you that testing is a relationship, and it's about what's happening in the classroom. So if the district wants to know how kids are doing here, embed those tests. Figure out how to get the state to increment them through the year rather than one big burst of April testing, which exempts kids from quite a bit of curricula in the spring, which is a concern to me. There may be several weeks between AP tests, SAT tests, STAR testing. There are weeks that kids are not in regular class, and we lose that. Or maybe they haven't had anything on percentages yet, and yet the test was timed before that unit, and they flunked it. So my point is, in the era in which we may go back maybe 20 years and see when kids' test scores match their achievement levels and their motivation to achieve as adults in college and in the community, those testing units that we used were embedded. We didn't have all of these tests, and we had a very good idea of how our students were doing. So I really encourage, even if you use state tests, say, how can we get these between the teacher and the student, not between the student and the state?
In the classroom and teacher evaluation, one reason I came out tonight was that it's academic freedom is just not about tests. It's about supporting the mental, physical, and emotional health of the students. It's about giving them the fire in their belly to go out and be global citizens in this world and to have confidence. If that doesn't just come from answering the right box on a test. It comes from careful nurturing from the classroom teacher. And I don't want to see academic freedom be taken away from a teacher that knows the students. I have a class right now of 30. Out of that class of 30, I have one with a 12th grade reading level. This is 8th graders. One with a 4th grade reading level. I have some students with 6th grade reading level, about four EL students, and one that was recently transitioned from from emotionally disturbed program. And I'm the first mainstream teacher because they said I care. And I do care. And just having those standards on the board on a day-to-day basis and ignoring the mental, physical, and emotional health of those students and not nurturing them as a surrogate parent, to me, is doing myself a disservice as a teacher. So I hope that before you mandate or take away any academic freedom from our teachers, that you visit the classrooms, because it's a jungle out there. Excuse me, I've had a long day. And you need to know that the teachers in this district, there's not one of them that I know that's a slacker. They're all doing their job. And I want you to go into the classrooms before you take away the fire in their belly. Thank you.
Thank you. Heather, did you... You know what, I'd really like... Mrs. Dickinson, I'm going to let you comment, but I really want to get on to Dr. Valentine because there are three other things, and we need to be finished by 9 o'clock.
Maybe we should let go of the thinking that these four things are distinct, because we've been talking about professional development guidelines and all of this all simultaneous. It's just like my kids say, that's not social studies, it's not English. Well, yes, it is. So I think we're covering all of them beautifully. We're making progress. But my comment was, like Myla's talking about, being able to respond. You know, what is responsibility? It's being the ability to respond. And I think this, Joe left, but I think lectures feel like they're cookie cutters when the students don't think that responding, and that's being a responsible teacher. So I like a district that supports that. And I think the standard should just be, kind of like the goals that you as the professional use in relation to your students and what they need and who they are. And you have the freedom to put it all together. So, and who would want to be an administrator? I certainly would not. And they're the ones that are bound by this No Child Left Behind, because they have to go into survival mode. You know, we get this money, and they have to keep that going and all that. So we acknowledge that, and we're glad we have such superb administrators. But the teachers have to participate in the revolution that keeps the good teaching alive and inspiration possible in the classrooms. And that's our responsibility. So how does that all work together? I'm not sure. But it has to for the district to be vibrant.
I would just point out that money is the mother's milk of everything in the United States, and that it would be irresponsible of the school board to walk past opportunities for us to generate funds which directly go back to our classrooms and our students. Mrs. Negrante, and then I'll go over here. Well, if we're... Okay, well, you know what? I want to poll the board right now and see if the board has an interest in more strictly going through this, or if the board has an interest in continuing the free flow, recognizing that at about 20 or so till 9 o'clock, I'm going to end the discussion and ask the board to engage in discussion among themselves on this topic and see if there are other things that we as a board would like to pursue.
Well,
So I'm looking at board members, and I'd like to know what, Dave, what you're feeling. Would you like it? Okay. Adrian? John? Mark? Okay. Can we stick with the script? As can we have a little bit of free flow as long as we cover the items on the script? I can decide? All right, I'll decide. I'm going to have Dr. Valentine speak to the professional development issue, and then we will continue this sort of discussion that we're having, and then I'll recognize you next.
Well, my fear was if you went to a freak, you'd find the administrators at this table being mindlessly supportive of 180 mathematics standards in the fifth grade. I think you'd find uniform opposition to that amongst administrators and amongst teachers, which raises the sort of question, if not 150, then how many? And that's really what professional development kind of segues into, because our second topic is professional development. We've shared in the backup tonight that professional development ideally flows to student need, which is evidenced by student performance. Most specifically, we're putting energy into the task of closing the achievement gap. This involves defining what is important for students to learn, allocating time to the learning of those things, getting common feedback on whether students are learning those things, and finally, and I think most importantly, collaborating with colleagues on what to do as a team when students don't learn. We've heard concerns regarding a particular approach we've taken. They involve concerns over the facilitator, concerns over the time commitment, and some concerns, as you've heard, over the work itself. But we haven't heard concerns over the fundamental inquiry. What is important for students to know? When are they going to have an opportunity to learn it? How are we going to know if they did learn it? And what are we going to do with the information about whether or not they learned? And nobody has pushed away those questions as irrelevant or unproductive. We have participants here tonight in that particular experience and in others, and would encourage folks to share their experience with that.
I'm Greg Bencourt. I'm a counselor at San Luis High School, so my perspective is just a little bit different. But the first thing I want to say is how impressed, it's been a long time since I was at a board study section, and how impressed I am at the insight and knowledge and the commitment and passion of kind of everybody that's here. It's very heartening, actually. My professional development kind of take on this is that I think, as we all know, the district sets the tone at the district level and at the board level. The tone for the district is set, and Mary Matakovich tried to teach me years ago that perception is very often at least as important as reality, and if the perceptions that I think illustrate how at the district level or at the board level. Tones can be set, maybe intentionally and maybe unintentionally. The very first paragraph under professional development says, I know you can all read, I'm not trying to insult your intelligence, but I'll read you. Professional development occurs at both the site and district level with frequent coordination between the two. At a district level, we want professional development to flow to areas of student need, evidenced in student achievement data. Well, as a high school counselor, I can tell you that there are a lot of student needs that could be addressed by professional development that cannot be measured by achievement data. And by having that be the focus of and the only focus of professional development, I think the district sends a message to the teachers and the students and the parents of the district. On page 5, I think it is, on page 5, actually under academic freedom, if you'll bear with me, the third paragraph from the bottom talks about all that said, there's tremendous room for collaboration on professional practices, insightful use of achievement data, and the incorporation of teaching personality. And I wasn't entirely sure what that meant, except that if some effort towards professional development addressed addressed ways to help teachers use their own talents to teach the standards that are identified as the most important, I think that would send a message that, you know, individual teachers, as they are different from one another, are really important. Thank you.
Will, and then Heather, and then Mrs. Grantee.
Good evening. Will Jones, principal of San Luis Obispo High School. And it's been interesting to listen to and absorb all the comments that have been made. And I'll talk for a second about professional development. And because the WestEd training, or the local accountability training, is one that's fresh in everyone's minds, I think I'll address that not as a controversial subject, but as just as a tool that was available to us in order to accomplish some of the goals that we were trying to accomplish. As a high school administrator, as a high school principal, I have to remain objective about the professional development opportunities that come our way. I have to be able to stand back far enough to make a determination whether I think the effort that we're going to put into the standards to take the ideas of developing an instructional calendar that shows what we're teaching and to some degree how we're going to teach it. I'm looking at preparation for tests, which are inevitable, and I'm saying which of these professional developments is going to help me draw all those things into a line that can be of value to me, to my teachers, to my students, and to my school community. So ultimately, I have to remain objective long enough to make that kind of decision. I lived in conflict with the time committed to the WestEd process, but I saw value in it. And here's the value that I saw. And I want to say this in relation to what Paula had to say about embedded assessment. First of all, I saw WestEd as an opportunity to create data based on embedded tests within our curriculum that these were standards taught by our teachers to our students over a period of time and then tested on, yes, a multiple choice test that was a benchmark test that was developed from questions that were available to our teachers. The important part about that is then that a teacher, whatever grade level, whatever subject, could sit down with another teacher at that grade level at that subject and compare the feedback, the results they got back from their students. To me, that's meaningful collaboration, that's meaningful dialogue that can be of great value to the teacher and to the students and can do two things. One is improve performance of those students, and two, give us specific information about specific students that could address the learning gap concerns that we have. Okay, so I saw value in that. Again, remaining as objective as I could for as long as I could. And again, objecting to a certain extent to the time that required teachers to participate in that. That's valuable time that we don't like to lose. The second point I want to make, and this just relates to, I've had the good fortune to work with Bruce Tadone for a long time, and I've heard his tirades about testing for as long as I've known him, and I enjoy the conversation, although usually it's a monologue. But I want to say this.
You need to stop talking.
Though. Okay. What I would be, here's a trade-off that I would be willing to make, and I would ask any teacher in the room today if they'd be willing to make this trade-off with me. Establish common assessments within our classes, agreed upon, that we are going to embed them in our instruction. We are going to teach the students what they need to know in order to be able to take, with some authenticity and with some motivation from their teachers, take those tests and make the best effort that they can. Look and have an assessment that we can really believe in and never take another STAR test again. I agree with Paula. I think that it's tragic that we spend as much time as we do. I've lived in conflict with it for a long time. And I do think it's tragic, the amount of time that goes into it and what we ask students to do. And I, as a high school administrator, ask them to do that year after year. And I try to find as many ways as possible to get them to be successful on that. But I'd be willing to make that trade-off. Teachers, accept the benchmarks embedded in your assessment and in your instruction. Motivate your students to do well on that, get authentic results, talk about those results, improve instruction, help kids learn, and let's forget about the STAR test.
Mr. Jones, okay. I have two questions about that, Mr. Jones. Mr. Jones.
Yes.
Why do the test assessments, are you saying the assessments have to be multiple choice? Could they be essay?
The other question was,
he said they had to be alike.
Yeah, would you be willing to throw out the multiple choice aspect? And the other part is, can we opt out of star testing and have alternative?
That's an alternative education.
I'd like
world.
To answer that.
We use multiple measures to determine how students learn. I believe that if you were to ask Mr. Simon and another 11th grade English teacher, they'll tell you that they're assigning a similar essay. They're reading a similar novel and they're writing a similar essay. What I would ask teachers to do simply is, after they've written those essays, and if those essays are based on, to some degree, standards that are meant to inform us about what good writing is, sit down, look at those essays, compare the results, determine whether the students are being successful, and then make changes, either yes or no, depending on those results. It could be an essay, it could be a project, it could be a multiple choice test. There's many ways to do that. What I think that what we've been trying to break through in the last few years is an environment of isolation. And I think that to a degree, standards, to a degree, some of the professional development, the idea has been to break away from that environment of isolation, to have more collaboration over what's good, what students should know and be able to do. And if we've gone about that in ways that have been a little bit circuitous, then, you know, we can do it better. But I think that's the whole idea. And
I don't think it happens very often. I don't really recall the last time that happened. In my high school career, my past 3.5 years or so, I've had many different teachers with many different ways of teaching. And I think the best teacher I ever had, that I will never forget, he taught the standards, but he had his own personal flair as to how he taught, and kids wanted to go to his class. He's just a great teacher. I've been in a class where I felt that my right to learn was taken away, because the next year when I went on to the next level, I just couldn't even compete with the other kids in my class who might have had a different teacher for the last year. So it just basically what I'm trying to say is it will never be perfect. It's impossible. It's impossible for it to be perfect. I think what we're trying to do is make it the best that it can be. And it's really hard because there's so many different methods out there. But as far as multiple choice goes or different methods, Jordan, he made a really good point. Life after high school isn't multiple choice. It just isn't. You need to know the information, but I don't know if multiple choice is the best way to teach it. But it's really a student. It's really a student's process of learning or its ability to learn that we should really question, because it's rare to find two students that learn exactly the same and learn best under certain circumstances. So I think this is a really hard task to accomplish. But I think I'm only 16. I don't know what to do. You know, I don't know the best way to handle this. But I think what we need to think about is that students don't learn the same way, and it'll be a hard task to find the best way to do it. But we need to realize that there's not one way to do it, but we just need to find the best way to accomplish those goals.
Thank you. You know, I've got a couple of other people that have been wanting to speak. I know Jim wanted to speak, and I forgot your name. I'm so sorry. Miss Naylor wants to speak after that, and then Jim over here wants to speak too. So, Jim.
Embedding the assessments or tests in instruction, and I think that most of us would say that we could live with that. But the key here is that they actively engage in planning their professional development. Those of us who've been around a long time, some of us participated in the writing project, the literature project, and it appears that Janet Gould was talking about what you mentioned as far as workshops that you went to.
The response to intervention and professional learning communities.
That, to me, when teachers go out and they participate in these things and they bring back to their sites insight and new knowledge and new learning, that is the most effective kind of professional development. When teachers are treated as colleagues, as experienced and knowledgeable people, and additional information is brought to them that they can utilize in the classroom, that's the most effective type of professional development. You get a cadre of people who feel strongly about some movement, whatever it is, writing project, lit project, what have you, and they in turn work with their colleagues on it. It's that collegial collaboration, it's that sort of grassroots beginning, I think, that makes professional development effective. And then, of course, the other piece of it is sharing. Once you've come up with strategies and you've come up with assessments, the ability to share those and to see how well you're doing. But to me, professional development, the key to it is it coming from the teachers, coming from a need that the teachers perceive, a need that they perceive, that their students, the students have this need and the teachers perceive it. So I think that that's the most effective kind, not something that is brought from the outside and imposed on an entire group. Thank you.
I just want to say something about Q real fast that applies to this. At that conference, Dr. Thornburg talked about the gap that's happening between the United States and the rest of the world, particularly the BRIC nations, which is Brazil, India, Russia, and China. These nations are at the top of their game, and the United States is up here, and these countries are just coming right up. The United States has come up in our bottom kids up to have them perform so that no child will be left behind. But while we're doing that, we can't sacrifice the top of our students. And as a science teacher with 32 kids in my class of every level, from the bottom to the top, I'm trying to develop in them, you know, the sense of wonder in science and at the same time teach the standards, etc. But what is really important is that we are given professional development time in order to learn how to deal with a large range of students in our classroom, how to challenge the top and how to bring the bottom up. And so we need people who can tell us how to do that. The other alternative, of course, would be to lower class sizes so that we have less students in the classroom. When I gave my last assessment on the mousetrap car, normally in the past we had a common assessment that was developed a long time ago where each kid would bring their car up to you and they would talk to you about their car, tell you Newton's laws, how they apply some concepts. This year, we couldn't do it because we didn't have the time because we were trying to teach all these standards. And so we're pressed for time. We're pressed for too much stuff, and we are losing our top end. I hate to say that, but I have kids in my class, and I don't like to see them reading a book on the side because they're really good multitaskers. But I hate to tell them to put their book down because they get what I say. And so I'm like, how do I deal with these kids? I can't tell them, you know, you got to put your book down. You got to stay with me, da, 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 when they're kind of bored. I hate to say that. Anyway, professional development. Show me how to do it. And also bring in these speakers like Dr. David Thornburg. Oh, he's amazing. And he will encourage us to realize where we are and what we have to do.
You know, I've got a couple other people that just haven't had an opportunity to speak yet. And I think, Gail, you had your hand up before, didn't you?
Me?
You.
You know what? I do want to speak, but...
And I know Charlie back there would like to have an opportunity also.
My first comment, Bruce, is that it's hard for me to sit here, and I have to say it is working. I think that we're working really hard. I can't go home tonight thinking that all my hard work, it's not working. I think we all work really hard in the classroom, and there's a lot of good things happening. I think we're meeting a lot of great needs for a lot of kids. And there's a lot of great things going on. I'm on curriculum council for the first year. There's a lot of great things that happen there.
I'm on a textbook committee for social studies adoption, which I've had a voice in picking a textbook that's going to work, and that's working, and we're being heard. I've sat on management team many times in my school, and that works, and I get heard. So as far as my academic freedom and how I feel as a teacher, and if I'm heard in the schools, I believe that I have a voice and that I'm being heard.
Hey, Charlie. You ready?
Sorry, I was checking for my notes, and I don't see anything.
You know what? Charlie, do you want to wait? Because I know Mary Jo would like to speak too, and then why don't you go after Mary Jo?
I have to lower this way down. Thank you. Mary Jo Devitt, San Luis Obispo. My purpose in speaking is motivated by those who have motivated me for the last 43 years, and that's students. So I wanted to address the question of, and I know Joe is gone, but I know this will get back to him, why we have to learn this. How is this going to help me? And I wanted to use an example that I had today in a classroom, in a sixth grade classroom here in San Luis Coastal, as a substitute, and a marvelous teacher. And it was a great experience. Anyway, we were having this review in math. And she had given me the academic freedom of choosing four examples from each review page to use. And the subject matter was measurement. So I just glanced over the pages. And so I said, okay, this number. So then I said 19 and 22. And I said, gee, 1922. I said, that's the same year as women were given a right that they'd never before had. Does anybody know what that might be? And I thought, you know, this is a teachable moment. You can tell I pay attention at these meetings. And so actually several students raised their hand, and the first person I asked knew the answer and said that was the year women were given the right to vote. Now, that may never be necessary to know. They may never use that, but I can honestly tell you it's education, and that's why. And I my mother used to say to me when I was young, and I can tell you right now, I did not like it. It's such a shame that youth is wasted on the young because they don't appreciate it, and I certainly didn't. I'm 65 years old. I've been in education for 43 years. I have been subbing for this district 27 years next month. I have never...
We want to get you to speak, too.
Hello. thanks so much for having this whole deal. I'm sorry I don't have printed notes. I've been away, and so I'm working off of this. I wanted to say that I teach for the love of words and the passion of the whole thing. I'm a gestalt guy, and I always have been. It's just the way I am. It's the big stuff. It's the amazing moments, okay? And... also, of course, a passion for working with kids and for doing what's right. And back when I started at Los Osos Middle School in 84, we had a one-sheet course outline. And it was written on an IBM Selectric. Everyone remember those? Double-spaced and outline form. And there was one side for the first semester and one side for the second. And, you know, it was our function. It was our working document. And the way it worked was that various people used their passions to teach what they needed to teach. And I was the writing guy. We had a drama gal. We had kind of the lit person, you know. And people sort of dealt with what they were supposed to through their own passions. At the end of the semester, the first semester, my writing classes would have those paper report folders, you know, just your classic report folders, that would be splitting their seams because they had written so much that they couldn't do anything with, you know, there was just too much stuff in there. Now, we have probably about 10-point font, almost the whole page, four pages of standards. And that's the focus. Okay, fine, that'll work for me. I can do that. I can kind of do gestalt and the other at the same time. But my kids ended this last semester with four pieces of writing in their portfolio. And it's because there is so much other, I won't use the word, there are other things to do that aren't writing and reading, which is a problem for me in an English class. A great woman over 100 years ago said, man walks in the direction toward which he looks, and where his treasure is, there will his heart be also. And my treasure, my heart is in that passion for words and that magic of communication and all that stuff. And I recognize pendulum swings happen in education. It's part of the game. But right now, with the state standards and with the STAR test and with our nation's policies and with our state's policies and the whole direction we're going, it's basically what we value is evaluation, school funding, everything is discrete facts. And at that point, my heart is gone. It's displaced with something that someone else values. So in terms of my academic freedom, it's pretty stomped on. I had a student named Candace last year, and I didn't give her a core book or a supplemental approved novel. I suggested a book that I thought would work for her, and we talked about it, and she went home and read it. She came back before school started, waving that book in my face, and she said, "This book changed the way I see the world." That's why I teach. I was looking for our mission statement, and I couldn't find it on the web. But I found our board philosophy statement. And I was really heartened, because I said, you know, I'm going to go through here and underline things and circle things. And almost everything I found there completely supports my gestalt love of the whole kid and the holistic thing. Everything, care and concern, progress at optimum rates, self-esteem, respect for others, cultural differences, high expectations, more than academics, unique individual, all that stuff is there. At the very bottom is one thing that might support the direction we're going right now in not just our district, but generally. Assessment is an integral part of the educational process, which I agree with 100%. I just don't believe a bubble test is the way to do it. So I wanted to thank the board for having a philosophical statement like that that clearly supports what I find is good education, but it just tears me up that almost everything we focus on these days is exactly the opposite of all those marvelous things our philosophy statement calls for.
Thanks, Charlie.
Thank you.
Pete, did you have... I'm just going to go to people now who haven't had a chance to speak. Pete, did you have something you wanted to say really quickly? And then Dr. Truesdale. And
just briefly, I think that Pete Zotovich, Morro Bay High School. Morro Bay for the last 7 years has been, I think, really working hard, not on standards, but on student achievement and following through with the standards that we have to do, the standards that are there. Yes, we deal with those. But we also look at the individual student. We've been analyzing data. We do all kinds of things. The late start's absolutely fabulous. My teachers at my school have tremendous autonomy to establish their curriculum, to establish their professional development. Other than West Ed, culminating activity of 7 years of working really, really hard on common assessments. Well, first it started with the common calendar. Do we all know what we're doing? Do we all know where we want to go? Are we organized? Can we take ourselves through? It helped us be very efficient with our time. The next activity we did was common assessments, where we started working on common assessments. West Ed was never supposed to be anything but embedded into the common, It was an idea for teachers to have the opportunity to look at how are we doing. Instead of the days of old where I work as an individual, I get to work now as a collaborative team. And isn't that what we're teaching our kids to do anyhow? I don't know one of my teachers that does cookie cutter. I don't know one of my teachers that doesn't believe in the spirit and the soul and the heart of the students at Morro Bay High School. This is a passionate school. And if you hear people talk about Morro Bay High School, it's about the teachers. It's all about the teachers, the passion of the teachers, how hard they work towards the betterment of their students, how much they care about the different things that are going on in their teachers' lives, in their students' lives. It's about students. No longer is it about what I teach my favorite lesson and what I teach, how do I feel about this or about that in my lesson. It's about, are my students learning? Am I given the same opportunity for all of my students? Am I getting together and talking with my colleagues about best practices? And boy, I didn't do this right. How about did they do this? Did you do this better than I do? I can't tell you how much my English and math teachers are talking to each other about lessons. A little while ago we had Fayla Chapman sitting here, on her own with her biology department, she established a common assessment. Is Fela still here? Fela established last year, on her own, a common assessment for biology with her staff. They developed the questions. They did a lot of the work themselves. They took it through. And what was the culminating activity? Their kids did fabulous in classes. One of the byproducts, they just happened to be the highest test scores in the county in biology, if you go by the state test. And that's what we have currently right now. I don't know about corruption or not corruption or politicians paying off, but we have standards. Don't we want something? And don't we want our kids to all kind of maybe come out of high school knowing something about something when they go on to whatever they're doing next, college, junior college? I want my kid to be, if he's just going to be a good mechanic, I want him to know how to. They've done tremendous things in the years they've been here. These two are both going on to major universities. We're starting something new at our school, I won't talk about it right now, that's trying to grasp even more kids to go on to be successful where they're going. For me, West Ed was a culminating activity to help my teachers who said in their surveys at my school, I'm not always sure I know what a standard is. West Ed taught them standards that they said they didn't maybe necessarily know, even though we thought they did. It was a situation where we started to develop some benchmarks because we said we were doing common assessments, but we weren't taking it all the way to the nth. This is helping us take it to the nth. I didn't see it, I didn't see it personally as a negative. I understand how many of my teachers felt. If you like to talk to some of my individual teachers, they're more than happy to talk to you about this. And this wasn't about West Ed, just that my staff has had a lot of opportunity to have tremendous say on what they want to do and what they're learning in their classes. And my teachers do not do anything scripted. Nothing was ever mentioned about that. My staff members do their own individual things that they're going to do, that they think are important based on standards. They get together and talk about it. They approach it from a lot of different directions. Thank you.
Hi. I'm here as an invited, unbiased, third-party guest. I'm a faculty member at Cal Poly, and I teach within the curriculum and instruction program there in the Department of Graduate Studies. And I also come from K-12 background. I taught high school English, debate, journalism, basically anything they needed. So I have some experience with this. And my reasons for entering higher education centered a lot on some of the topics that you have here, including academic freedom. And so as I'm sitting back here listening as that unbiased third party, I'm noting some interesting points here. One thing, I commend you all on teachers having your voice heard and not allowing the powers that be take over. I think it's very important to have conversations like this. But even more importantly, I think it's really important to have these students' voices heard. And that is great. It's a good thing to see and hear. And I think it's all of that's being said here is really their own style. So if we're talking about professional development, what works and what doesn't work in professional development, I have found, again, through my research and experience, it's got to center on intrinsic motivation, not some kind of external locus of causality like testing. It's really curious to see the academic freedom and testing being so closely correlated in our conversations, when typically you wouldn't think of academic freedom being associated so closely with testing. I mean, even just reading under academic freedom, our emphasis in professional development has been upon standards, collaboration, equal access, and attention to results. Well, standards and attention to results, they're both, that's testing issues, accountability issues. Collaboration, that seems more like a mode of operation rather than a goal. And then, of course, equal access is important. So I guess the question I would pose to the board and the people here today is, how can the board help support teacher innovation through the use of things like professional development? How can the board help not only instilling but maintaining intrinsic motivation that doesn't necessarily have to do with directives, mandates, testing. You know, how do we help professionals, teachers, enhance their professionalism? How do we help them, you know, feel comfortable in sharing their opinions and innovation? I don't think I saw the word innovation in any of the literature here. And that, I mean, I think any teacher would say they'd love to be able to get together and talk about innovative methods of practice rather than how did you cover all the standards. So I guess that would be the challenge I would pose to the people here today is just how do you support that pursuit that every teacher here, I think, would want, and that is the opportunity to learn innovative practice in a more holistic sense, in that ability to weave standards organically rather than the prepackaged approach that students, as we all know, don't really respond
seconds
to.
Before we go into the wrap, that as we look at the California standards for the teaching profession, the emphasis is upon teacher empowerment and teacher creativity within, of course, an understanding that we all need to have some understanding of what it is we want students to know and be able to do. But as we talk about teachers building on students' prior knowledge, life experience, and interests to achieve learning goals for all students, teachers create physical environments that engage all students in purposeful learning activities and make subject matter accessible to student. Teachers use their knowledge of student development and so forth. Teachers plan instruction that draws on and values students' backgrounds, prior knowledge, and interests. Teachers use information from ongoing assessments to plan and adjust learning. And teachers reflect on their teaching practice and engage in planning their professional development. I do believe that the closer we get to embracing those standards, those teaching behaviors, focused on the standards, focused, and standards may be a word that has some emotional value to us, if we can look on it as focused on some common goal or dream that we have for student achievement, and yes, the rest of the student as well, that if we embrace these teaching behaviors, that we really are calling upon people to be as innovative and creative and as powerful as they can possibly be. We also believe that collectively we can do that more powerfully than we can as a collection of isolated and fragmented individuals.
I'm going to bring it back to the board now and see if the board has comments. We've heard an awful lot this evening and where we would want to take this next. Mr. Buckman.
Before we get too far, first of all, I'm just incredibly excited. I was just talking to Rick, and Rick and I are both agreeing that the amount of passion here is just phenomenal. And whether it's we agree or disagree, it's really inspiring, and it just makes me really glad that I live in this school district. But I do have one small question, because I heard it come up from several areas, several times, I asked Walt, and it's, has anybody heard, or is there an advanced agenda item, or is somebody out there saying that the board is looking to take away academic freedom? Because I can't remember saying that, and I can't remember hearing that, and I'm just confused about why that was coming up.
The end of the next presidency, the moment that a teacher has in the classroom with a student is more lasting and more real than any political system that, unfortunately, school districts have to address. So I believe that the idea that tonight we were speaking and everyone came out about the individual stake that the teachers and the administrators have in the classroom and how important it is the critical piece of what we experienced, and that I don't think will ever change. So I just wanted to thank everybody for coming out tonight and point out that the next board meeting, there will be an assessment or a discussion of follow-up aspects to tonight's discussion, because there's not enough time, obviously, to do that tonight. So that's an important portion of any study session. I want to remind people who want to follow up with that to come to the next board meeting on March 20th. But what happens in the classroom is a lot more important than what happens in Washington, D.C.
Thank you. I'll try to be brief. I just want to comment. I didn't disagree with anything Jim said about maybe the best way for some kinds of professional development training to come about. But there is some value in the district having an organizational perspective that sees needs within the overall organization that some kind of professional development can benefit. I believe that's what the intention was with West Ed, regardless of how it all went about. My take in reviewing all this material, I was scared to death of this session, frankly, and those of you who watch meetings, but as Adrian pushed this issue, bless you, an important issue, and I'm glad she did. Sometimes it's us old guys, you know, we're getting nervous. But what struck me is the real issue for academic freedom for me is if we expect you all to provide differentiated learning, close achievement gaps, respond to socioeconomic problems that children bring to school with them at all of our grade levels, what we need to be looking at is teacher-student ratios. And I think that's where academic freedom begins.
I wrote some notes beforehand, and I think I mentioned most of them. This wasn't just a response to West Ed, by the way, on my part. I heard teachers' voices. You know, the board listens to teachers. And different times over the year, you know, I heard how it's all going for everybody. So I'm real excited that you all came. In terms of research, you know, all this emphasis on tests, I'm just wondering who's researching would test scores go up, what goes down? And it's been mentioned tonight that there are things that we're missing and losing in the current situation. Yeah, there's a lot of things. Cultural achievement, music and the arts, and many of the things that were mentioned. People who are original thinkers, and this is what Dr. Truesdell is talking about too, creative people, people who think for themselves, you know, it has to be a goal of education, helping these people be that way. So I would like to encourage teachers to keep being people who think for themselves. In the middle of all of this impossible things, like Walter's talking about, you know, these impossible expectations, you know, what can happen? Well, these professional people who are so trained and have so much experience better keep thinking for themselves and making their own decisions on a daily basis and let the chips fall where they may. But you're the ones, you are hired to do that job, so think for yourselves.
And I'm just going to close again. I think on behalf of the board, I want to thank everybody for being here. You really added a lot to the mix. And I'd like to just close by saying there. What I'm hearing and what I'm thinking as a parent and as an educator myself, what kind of people are we getting into our classrooms to actually teach? We can teach all the standards in the world, and I think there is a value in as a parent having expectations that things will be taught to my children. I want to know that my child is going to be successful. If I'm an immigrant from Mexico and I have high aspirations, I want my children to learn because I've come to this country hoping for a better life than I had someplace else. And the only way that we can do that, it's not working. So, and the only, I don't think they're working. There we go. And the only way that's going to happen is if we give our kids with somebody I wanted to listen to, and they were teaching me really good stuff. And I think if we can get our teachers teaching that and support that, then we've won, and I think our children have won. And on that, I'm just, again, going to thank everybody for being here and remind you that on the 20th we will be reviewing this. Thank you very much.